So, for those who don't know me, I'm Chad Andrews. We're gonna start off by kind of looking at where we've been. 2 weeks ago, Mike kicked us off our Hope in the Wilderness series in Exodus chapter 3, which was God's mediator in the wilderness. This is where God revealed his character as the eternal I Am to a shepherd who felt completely inadequate for the task. I can certainly relate to that. There was the burning bush, which was a miraculous sight. That's where God shows that his presence can be among his people without destroying them. Mike also reminded us of how God called Moses to be his mediator and to free his chosen people. Though Moses was reluctant, God promised to be with him just as he's with you and me. And finally, we were reminded by Mike with great importance that God revealed himself to Moses by name when asked. He revealed himself as Yahweh, the great I Am, by saying to Moses, I am who I am. And then last week, Brian continued to walk us through this Lenten series with Exodus 12 and 14, which represent God's sacrifice and rescue in the wilderness. In Exodus 12, we saw how God became a real thorn in Pharaoh's side by delivering his 10 plagues. The 10th, Brian so beautifully, in my opinion, painted a picture of, which was the instructions for Passover. We saw the angel of the Lord come down and strike down every firstborn in Egypt, those with the blood of the sacrifice and unblemished lamb smeared on the two doorposts and lintels of their houses were spared. Pharaoh reached his breaking point and released God's people. In Exodus 14, we saw that God ultimately set a trap for Pharaoh and his elite chariot force by having the people of Israel turn back and camp by the banks of the Red Sea. This is where God's people first begin to question if all of this is worth it, and if they're being led out into the wilderness to die. Moses told them to fear not, to stand firm, and to see the salvation of the Lord, exclaiming to the people that the Egyptians they now see, they will never see again. And we all know how the story goes. Moses raises his staff, the seas part, the people safely make it to the other side. And when Pharaoh and his chariots give chase, they're swallowed by the sea. The beauty in this message that Brian delivered last week is the reminder that God is always with us, and he will never, ever leave us alone, and we can trust. Like Israel trusted God through Passover, through their escape from bondage, through the Red Sea, and from the evil powers, that if we can trust God as Israel did, we too will be delivered to safety. So these two chapters, 12 and 14, serve as receipts for God's faithfulness that the Israelites so quickly forgot in the wilderness. Now, before we get started, I've got a confession to make. I've committed a sin this week, a sin that most of you would never dream of calling me out on. In fact, if you saw me doing it, you might even have joined in. In our church culture today, we have a list of the big sins. We have the scandalous ones. We have the ones that make headlines. The ones that can break families. But then we have what I call the respectable sins. These are the sins we dress up as just being honest or venting or just having a bad day. Talking about the sin of grumbling. Grumbling feels small. It feels like a personality trait. But in the kingdom of God, grumbling is actually a spiritual crisis. It's a sound of a heart that has forgotten how to trust. And today, we're stepping into Exodus chapter 16. But before we do, I need to briefly summarize chapter 15 because there are some important things to note. Nearly all of chapter 15 is spent with Moses and the people of Israel rejoicing, singing praise, and worshiping the Lord for delivering them. But in verses 22 through 27, we see that Moses brings the people to Marah, which is named as such because the water is undrinkable, as it's very bitter. The people began to grumble, and the Lord then presented a log to Moses, which when it was thrown into the water then became sweet. It is there that the Lord made for them a statute and a rule. In verse 25b, and it's here that he tested them. The Lord told Moses that if they were diligently to listen to him, if they do what is right, and they listen to his commands, he would not bring any of the diseases or plagues upon them that he did to Egypt. And he would remain their healer. Moses and the people then came to Elim, which is essentially a plentiful oasis. And that is where it brings us today, where we'll pick up in chapter 16. So in chapter 16, we find the nation of Israel exactly 30 days into their freedom. The miracle of the Red Sea is still fresh. The Egyptian army is at the bottom of the ocean, and the whips of slavery are gone. But suddenly, the honeymoon phase is over. They're in the in-between. They aren't where they used to be, but they aren't where they're going to yet. And in that dry, dusty middle ground, their respectable sins begin to surface. They look at Moses and they say, at least in Egypt we had meat pots. At least there we had bread to the full. But they were romanticizing their chains because they were terrified of the wilderness. And if we're honest, we do the exact same thing today. When the bank account is low, when the marriage is dry, when the health report is scary, we start to look back to our own Egypts. We start to grumble because we've lost our daily bread perspective. But here's the good news, Grace Life. God doesn't respond to their, or didn't respond to their grumbling with lightning bolts. He responded with a miracle. He uses their respectable sin as an opportunity to reveal his irrational grace. So, if you got your Bibles, please join me in Exodus 16. We're going to be beginning in verse 1 as we look into the mirror and find the God who provides even when we complain. We're going to start with verses 1 through 3, which say, they set out from Elim, and all the congregation of the people of Israel came to the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai. And on the 15th day of the second month, after they had departed from the land of Egypt, and the whole congregation of the people of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the people of Israel said to them, would that we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt when we sat by meat pots and ate bread out of the full. For you have brought us out into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. So look at verse 3 for me, church. The Israelites say, would that we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt where we were comfortable. Yeah, it wasn't perfect, but we had our stuff. We were good. But then when we sat by the meat pots and ate bread to the full. Did you catch that? They were exactly 1 month into their freedom, and suddenly Egypt, the place of infanticide, the place of the whip, the place where they cried out to God for rescue, suddenly it looked like a five-star resort in their minds. They remembered the meat pots, but conveniently they had forgotten the brick kilns. This is the trap of selective memory. When we are in a wilderness season, when relationships are being tested, when the career is stalled, when the grief is heavy, we start to develop a spiritual amnesia. We begin to romanticize our Egypt. We think, at least back when I knew what to expect, at least when I was living in that old sin, I didn't feel this empty. We prefer the certainty of our chains over the uncertainty of our freedom. Think about this for me, church. Think about a GPS versus a paper map. Most of us, we want to see the whole route. We prefer that paper map. kind of life. We want to see the whole route from the wilderness to the promised land. We want to know exactly where the turns are, where the rest stops are, exactly when we will arrive. But God doesn't give us paper maps. He gives us GPS grace. A GPS only tells you the next 500 feet. It says, in half a mile, turn right. And if you don't, he doesn't give up on you. He redirects your route. He puts you back on his track. It doesn't, the Israelites were grumbling because they couldn't see. They couldn't see the promised land on the horizon. So they assumed God had abandoned them in the dirt. They were demanding a map, but God was offering them a relationship. So let me ask you, where are you romanticizing your past right now? Where is the ghost of Pharaoh whispering to you that your life was better before you started following Jesus? See, grumbling is what happens when we demand to see the whole route instead of trusting the voice that says, I am with you in the next 500 feet. As David Guzik notes in his commentary on Exodus 16, their complaint wasn't actually about food. It was a lack of trust in God who had already split the sea for them. You see, the wilderness doesn't change who God is. It only reveals who we think he is. And in verse 4, we'll see that God doesn't give up or give them a map. He gives them bread. In verses 4 and 5, it says this, then the Lord said to Moses, behold, I am about to rain bread from heaven for you. And the people shall go out and gather a day's portion every day, that I may test them whether they will walk in my law or not. And on the sixth day, when they prepare what they bring it in, it will be twice as much as they gather daily. Now we're going to skip ahead several verses to verse 16. 16 says, this is what the Lord has commanded. Gather of it, each one of you, as much as he can eat. You shall each take an omer, which is about a quart, according to the number of persons that each of you has in his tent. And the people of Israel did so. They gathered some more, some less. But when they measured it with an omer, whoever gathered much had nothing left over, and whoever gathered little had no lack. Each of them gathered as much as he could eat. And Moses said to them, let no one leave any of it till the morning. But they did not listen to Moses. Some left part of it till the morning, and it bred worms and stank. And Moses was angry with them. Morning by morning they gathered it, each as much as he could eat. But when the sun grew hot, it melted. We're going to pause right there. I want you to look at the specific strategy God uses here in verse 4. In verse 4, he says, behold, I'm about to rain bread from heaven for you. The people shall not go, or the people shall go out and gather a day's portion every day. Now, if you look through verses 15 through 21, God didn't give them a Costco membership. He didn't give them a warehouse or a deep freezer. He gave them exactly what they needed for each day, for the next 24 hours. And if they tried to hoard it, if they tried to stockpile grace because they didn't trust God for tomorrow, the Bible says, it says it grew worms and it stank. Why? Why would a God of infinite resources be so specific about a single day's supply? Well, because God wasn't just feeding their stomachs. He was training their hearts. See, the manna was a test of intimacy. God wanted them to wake up every single morning, walk out of their tents, and look at the ground as if to say, Lord, Lord, I'm still here, and I'm still hungry. Do you still care? And every morning, the ground was white with his faithfulness. But here is where the internal battle begins. So why did some of the Israelites try to hoard the manna? Why did they sneak out at night to tuck extra flakes under their pillows? It wasn't just hunger, church. It was the idol of self-reliance. You see, trust is a form of surrender. We have been trained by the world, and maybe by our own past traumas, to believe that if we don't control it, it won't happen. We think, if I don't stockpile this, if I don't manipulate this situation, if I don't rely on my own cleverness, then I'm going to be left with nothing. And this is the battle between the ego and the mana. Selfishness says, I am the only one and I can truly depend on. Trust says, I am not the source. I'm just the receiver. When the Israelites hoarded the bread, they weren't just being prepared. They were trying to be their own gods. They wanted to be the masters of their own supply. But God allowed that hoarded bread to rot. And he did this to show them a hard truth, that anything you try to grab outside of God's timing will eventually turn sour. So, what are you holding on to so tightly right now that it's starting to stink? Is it a relationship you've been trying to control? A career path you've been trying to force? A financial safety net that has become your actual God? The wilderness is designed to bankrupt our self-reliance so that we can finally discover the wealth of God's reliability. Stop leaning on your own scrambling and start leaning on his reigning bread. Because church, this story, this whole story we're going through, it's not ultimately about the bread. It's about a person. See, thousands of years later, a crowd gathered around Jesus in John 6. They had seen him feed 5,000, and they asked for a sign like the manna. And in verses 32 through 35 of chapter 6 in John, Jesus looked at them and said, "Truly, truly, I say to you, it was not Moses who gave you the bread from heaven, but my Father gives you the true bread from heaven. For the bread of God is he who comes down from heaven and gives life to the world." And then in verse 35, Jesus says, "I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me shall not hunger, and whoever believes in me shall never, never thirst." Jesus is our manna, church. Just as the Israelites had to gather the manna daily, we have to gather Christ daily. You cannot live today in the manna of last year's retreat or last month's mountaintop experience. There's a story from the end of World War II. And it was about relief workers caring for orphaned children who were terrified of starving. See, even after these children were fed and they were safe and they were put peacefully in their beds, they couldn't sleep. Finally, the workers had this idea. They would take a single piece of bread and they'd put it into each child's hand at night. The children didn't eat that bread. They just held it. And as they felt the texture of the bread, they finally fell asleep. Why? Because that bread was the promise for tomorrow. It was the evidence that they were cared for. Some of you are tossing and turning today. You're worried about maybe a surgery, worried about tuition, worried about the future. Jesus is the bread in your hand. He doesn't always give us the yearly supply of answers. He gives us himself. He says, "I am here today, and I'll be here when you wake up tomorrow." As John Piper says, God does not give grace parcels for next week. He gives daily mercies for daily needs. The manna in Exodus was a shadow. Jesus is the substance. One fed the body for a journey. The other feeds the soul for eternity. And we're going to go back over to Exodus, verses 22 through 30. On the sixth day, they gathered twice as much bread, two omers each. And when all the leaders of the congregation came and told Moses, he said to them, "This is what the Lord has commanded. Tomorrow is a day of solemn rest, a holy Sabbath to the Lord." This is the first introduction of the Sabbath. But what you will bake and boil, and all that is left over, lay aside to be kept till the morning. So they laid it aside till morning, as Moses commanded them, and it did not stink, and there were no worms in it. Moses said, "Eat it today, for today is a Sabbath to the Lord. Today you will not find it in the field. 6 days you shall gather it, but on the seventh day, which is a Sabbath, there will be none." On the seventh day, some of the people went out to gather, but they found none. And the Lord said to Moses, "How long will you refuse to keep my commandments and my laws? See, the Lord has given you the Sabbath. Therefore, on the sixth day, he gives you bread for 2 days. Remain each of you in his place. Let no one go out of his place on the seventh day." So the people rested on the seventh day. Did y'all notice the rhythm there? I mean, it's a lot of kind of back and forth, but on the sixth day, the ground was twice as white. There was a double portion of manna, and God gave a command that must have sounded terrifying to a people who had spent 400 years as slaves. Stop! See, in Egypt, if you stopped working, you were beaten. If you didn't meet your daily quota of bricks, you were severely punished. And for generations, the Israelites' value was tied entirely to their output. Their worth was their work. But here in the wilderness, God is performing a soul surgery. He is cutting away the slave mentality. He says, on the seventh day, you will not gather. You will sit, you will eat, and you will watch as the manna from yesterday stays fresh. This was the first time in their lives they were told that their survival didn't depend on their striving. It depended on God's sufficiency. Church, we live in a six-day world that depends on a seven-day hustle. We are the most scrambling generation in history. We check our emails at 11 p.m. We worry about our quotas while we're sitting in church. We act as if the world will stop spinning if we stop gathering. But when we refuse to rest, we're actually telling God, "I don't trust your double portion. I don't believe you can provide enough on Saturday to get me through Sunday." So where are you still frantically gathering on the seventh day? Maybe it's not physical work. Maybe it's mental gathering. You're gathering anxiety, gathering scenarios, gathering what ifs, because you don't trust God has already provided for your tomorrow. The Sabbath isn't just a rule. It's a declaration of independence. It's you telling your bank account, your boss, or your fears, "You're not my master. The Lord is my shepherd, and he has already set the table." As theologian Walter Brueggemann says, "Sabbath is an act of resistance. It is a resistance against the lie that we are what we do." You see, in the wilderness, God proved that he can do more with your rest than you can do with your restlessness. He is the God of double portion. He is the God who invites you to sit down because the bill has already been paid. We've traveled a long way today. From dusty complaints of the wilderness the dusty wilderness of sin to the crowded hillsides of Galilee where Jesus stood and offered himself as the bread of life. The story of Exodus 16 isn't just a history lesson about ancient nomads. It is the biography of our own souls. We are a people prone to grumbling, prone to romanticizing our past, and prone to the frantic scramble of the seventh day. But the beauty of the gospel, church, is that God doesn't meet our grumbling with a closed hand. he meets it with an open heaven. The manna was a temporary miracle for a temporary journey. Those who ate it, they eventually died. But there is a greater manna standing before us today. Jesus, as we sang about earlier, he's the bread that doesn't just sustain your life, he is your life. And if you're in a wilderness season right now, if you feel the hunger of not enough, I want you to hear this. Don't just seek the bread. Seek the provider. See, if you have the bread but you don't have the provider, you'll always be hungry for more. But if you have the provider, even in the leanest wilderness, you've got everything. So, just like I do with my youth on Wednesday, I've got a challenge. I challenge all of us to identify that one respectful sin, that one specific thing we've been grumbling about. Maybe it's our job. Maybe it's our health. Maybe it's a person in our life. But instead of grumbling, I want us to practice a litany of abundance. Every time that complaint rises to your throat, I want you to stop and say, Lord, thank you for the manna of today. Thank you that you are the bread in my hand, and I trust you for tomorrow. I want you to exchange your scramble for his Sabbath. I want you to exchange your fear for his faithfulness. Church, this week we learned that God provides the bread we need for the journey and to trust God's provision for our needs. But next week, Mike is going to show us where that journey was heading all along. The GPS will stop at the foot of a mountain. God didn't just bring them out of Egypt to feed them. He brought them to a mountain to meet them. And God is about to speak. Not just to Moses, but to the whole nation. Are you ready to hear the voice behind the grace? We've seen his hand providing for us. Next week, we're going to see his face. So, I think I'm okay-ish on time. Actually, I'm a little ahead. Don't tell nobody. As the worship team, they want to come up. I'm going to invite you that if you're tired of clutching your paper map, if you're ready to stop recalculating your own life and finally listen to the voice of the one who split the sea for you, I want to invite you to respond. Mike and I will be down on the wings, and as the worship team plays, if any of you need someone to pray for you and with you through a wilderness season, come as the Spirit leads. For the rest, see y'all next week at Mount Sinai.